It's a big year for Arthur Smith and the Atlanta Falcons in a wide-open NFC South with Desmond Ridder set to take over at quarterback and a very busy offseason. What does this roster look like? We're breaking that down today on the Locked On NFL Scouting Podcast.
You are Locked On NFL Scouting with the Draft Dudes, your daily podcast for NFL and college football scouting. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
What's better than this? It's guys being dudes here on the Locked On NFL Scouting Podcast. We're the Draft Dudes. I'm Joe Marino from Locked On Bills. He's Kyle Krabs from Locked On Dolphins. And we are your NFL experts here with you daily to talk team building across the league on the Locked On NFL Scouting Podcast with the Draft Dudes. We're part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. We'd like to thank you for making Locked On NFL Scouting your first listen every day, and of course, the biggest of welcomes to our everydayers, those of you who never miss a single episode. We appreciate y'all being here very, very much.
Joe, happy Thursday, May 18th, National May 18th Day.
Wow, thank you.
To you here.
It's good to be here. It's good to be here.
Atlanta Falcons. Our subject today, we did the deep dive. We obviously have Desmond Ridder as a key storyline for this Falcons team and what should be a very competitive NFC South with the departure of Tom Brady from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and all of these teams kind of feeling like they're in flux. Very interesting layers to this Falcons team that we're going to start peeling back. And I don't have any cute BS on the front today. Do you have any cute BS on the front, or are we going to dive right into the Falcons offense and talk about what we saw with this football team?
You know, no, I think we dive in. I don't see any no diving signs here, so let's get to it.
Okay.
Wow. Wow, that was
chill
bad.
With the dad jokes.
Yeah. Wow. Oof.
The offensive side of the football.
Yep.
For Atlanta. I'm just going to roll right through the red light that you tried to lay there at the end.
No stop signs here.
The Falcons roster to me is a very interesting case study because, of course, you have the last three first-round selections that have been invested by this team are in a wide receiver, a tight end, and a running back in Bijan Robinson and Kyle Pitts and Drake London. And I think that's probably the place that I would like to start this conversation just because those are defining pieces of what Atlanta is going to be this season in my mind. There's varying degrees of proven NFL track records. Obviously, Bijan Robinson hasn't taken a snap yet. Kyle Pitts with the 1,000 yards his rookie season before the regression last year and dealing with some injuries. And Drake London kind of dealing with this underperforming passing offense. Still really the only viable outside threat and weapon in my mind that exists in this Falcons offense. But showed really good toughness over the middle, ability to catch in traffic, physicality. All the things that you expected you were going to get with Drake London when you watched him at USC were the things that he flashed. So what's the ceiling with this trio in your mind? Because that, to me, is going to go a long way in defining what the ceiling of this team is.
Well, that's clearly who this offense is running through, those three players. And,
right.
I mean, they're dynamic. That's what's exciting. I mean, obviously, we've never seen Bijan play in the NFL, but I have very little concern about his ability to come in and be a focal point of the offense and really elevate this rushing offense and what he can bring as a receiver. I mean, that's huge. And, you know, Kyle Pitts, I mean, just like with Drake London, like, those guys dealt with some bad quarterback play, right? Like, Mariota was tough to watch last year. And I think it's impressive how London was still able to produce given that. And, you know, I think they just couldn't figure it out with Kyle Pitts, but we saw what Kyle Pitts can do 2 years ago. And so that trio, I mean, that's a lot of matchup problems for a defense. And I kind of like the idea of how you can sprinkle in some of these ancillary components like Cordarrelle Patterson, like Tyler Allgeier, like Jonnu Smith, who we know Arthur Smith has a clue what to do with, right? He's a different type of tight end, but I think you can we know that Arthur Smith can get production out of him. I wish they had another receiver, right? Like one more guy that maybe brought something different to the table, a more shifty separation guy, someone that can uncover quickly, you know, can play inside and outside. I wish that was part of this mix. But with a team that I think the identity is going to be running the football, getting the backs going in the passing game, utilizing your twin towers in London and Pitts. You know, it's an intriguing group, and one that I think meshes well with the style of offense that we know Arthur Smith wants to run.
And then not for nothing, but the other outside receivers, Mac Hollins, who's started as a height, weight, speed, vertical guy in Philadelphia, core special teams player, had some success in Miami, went to the Raiders last year, ended up being the wide receiver two there. He's really filled out his receiving resume, but I bring him up not for what I think his ceiling is as a player, and we do, for those of you who are on YouTube, we do have the depth chart that we're going to drop on you guys at the very beginning of segment three, but more so for the body type and profile and what he's capable of doing as a blocker in the run game. And you think about the size and catch radius of Pitts and London and Mac Hollins. Like, he's worth including in this conversation because it's all the same kind of player. I think he's a valuable peripheral complementary piece, like you mentioned. Would you like to go offensive line, or would you like to go Desmond Ridder next?
I'd like to go offensive line with one final comment here on these weapons.
Great.
Scotty Miller is kind of like an important player for this team. I think him, he's the one guy that can be that quick separator from the slot that hasn't really been that with any level of consistency. But if he can, right, I think that would mean a lot for this offense. But Kyle, I like this offensive line. I really do, man. We got a couple of franchise cornerstones here in Jake Matthews and Chris Lindstrom. I was excited to take the deep dive with this football team, in particular to watch Chris Lindstrom, right? Because we know he got paid gobs of money, and I wanted to see it, right? And I understand completely why he got paid gobs of money. This dude is a dominant guard and an absolute pillar of this unit up front. And then Jake Matthews, I mean, dude, how could you not have anything but admiration for this man's career? 144 consecutive starts at left tackle. He's missed one game in his entire career. And I think he's been unbelievably consistent, like year over year, regardless of what's going on with who's playing left guard or what, you know, what type of supporting cast exists. This guy comes in every single year and performs at a high, high level. And just a lot of admiration for his career, especially after studying him. But yeah, I think you got some nice developmental pieces. Like, I mean, Drew Dolman, I think, looked solid to me last year at center. Caleb McGarry certainly played his best football last year. And then it's just about this left guard spot where they took Matthew Bergeron. It could be Matt Hennessy as well. That wouldn't surprise me at all. I think that's a fun camp battle to be mindful of. But I like this mix. I think that it's a good group in front of Desmond Ridder.
Yeah, I think the growth that Caleb McGarry showed, the growth that Chris Lindstrom showed, Jake Matthews being Jake Matthews in year two of the system really creates the enthusiasm for what year three is going to look like, plus Matthew Bergeron, who, for my money, is going to be hard to keep out of the lineup.
Man, right.
Obviously, we have to talk about Drew Dolman, and we have to talk about Matt Hennessy, but I think Hennessy has some guard center flex that you can maybe work a different combination of five to get the right combination of five guys in there in the lineup, but Bergeron's going to be a hard guy to keep out, and that athleticism, along with Jake Matthews, along with McGarry, along with Lindstrom, it's a perfect stylistic fit for what Arthur Smith wants to do. And I was really taken aback by just how well that line played in stretches last year, particularly in run blocking and executing that Arthur Smith zone rushing system and helping the backs get the perimeter and creating a lot of big lanes. And they had some chunk plays that were brought back because of penalties. Algier had like a 50-yard run against Arizona, I think, that was brought back on a holding penalty that was kind of a ticky-tack hold, I thought. But it was just, even if it was, you want to call it a legit penalty, the execution of the other guys on the line that created this massive void for Algier to run through, they were, I think, even better than the numbers would tell you, and that's pretty crazy because of how good the rushing numbers were for the Falcons last year. Case in point, Algier being as productive as he was.
1,000-yard back, right? I'm not even sure he had good vision.
He did not.
He was getting it going. It was funny, I was watching the Baltimore game, and I'm like, man, I think Tyler Algier would be really good for Baltimore, but I'm not sure this is the best fit for him. in that more gap predetermined tracks.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because anybody who tried to argue against Bijan Robinson and pointed to Tyler Allgeier as the reason why, I'm all the way out on y'all. I'm sorry. There's good productive back, right? It's a testament to the rushing system. It's a testament to his size and size-adjusted speed that he does have. But when he's pressing the corner and you got a clear-as-day edge, and I'm thinking about cutting this thing back inside anyway, he just doesn't have the explosiveness to catch the corner. Bijan Robinson's going to eat in this offense.
Yeah.
And I have a take I would like to drop on you right now before we talk about Desmond Ridder.
Okay.
I think if you took the three first-round picks of the last 3 years, Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson will be the best player of those three players this year.
Ooh. I was wondering where you were getting, because he's definitely the best prospect of them all.
No, he's going to be the most effective player of the three this year.
Yeah, I think that's pretty comfortable. I think everything translates so easily there. A proven coach with running the football, a good O-line, an unbelievable talent. And I mean, they ran the ball decently last year with like nothing scary in the passing game.
Like he's going to run for what would you set a line?
A lot of yards. He's going to run for a lot of yards.
A lot of yards. We won't do a schedule prediction because we know sometimes the fans don't like what you end up coming back with a raw number. But
well, Kyle, we had four starts from Desmond Ridder. Did you learn anything? Did you learn anything?
I thought so. I thought I did.
What's your big thought here?
We don't. The training wheels were on, was my thought.
Right. That's what made it hard to learn a whole lot.
Working through progressions was labored. It was slow. But you understand, he's coming from Cincinnati. It's a big-time adjustment. But progression-style passing was not his strength. I thought they ran some half-field reads to try to cut down on that time of getting through progressions. I don't think it necessarily helped him. You'd have liked to have seen. I thought he did some nice things with his legs to extend plays and then get outside the pocket and get some yards. I wish in instances where he got flushed out of the pocket, if you're running a half-field read, you would run to the side of the field if you had the choice that has all your receivers to it instead of running to the side of the field where you release nobody out into protection against zone coverage, and then you got to try to outrun a cover two shell with a clouded corner, and you're going to have nowhere to go, right? So on extended plays, have awareness of where your outlets are and try and put yourself in position to get the ball to them. From a progression-style passing, I'm looking for growth in that regard. I thought this offense showed good cognitive awareness of what Desmond Ridder was. There were a lot of schemed throws, a lot of quick throws to the perimeter, screens, things to try to just facilitate getting the ball in space quickly that did not ask Desmond Ridder to do a lot of drop-back passing. But if that's what you're going to look like this year, you're going to have an uphill battle passing the football and winning games in which you're not able to dictate terms on line of scrimmage. Yeah, so that was my Desmond Ridder observations.
No, I'm very much aligned with your takeaways there. And I get nervous if this team really has to rely on Ridder.
Right.
Based on the sample size. I think the most encouraging thing is that the last two starts were better than the first two starts. There's a big quality of a competition layer to that as well. I mean, going from New Orleans and Baltimore on the road to Arizona and Tampa Bay in week 17 and 18 at home, right? That was a better situation for him, but he was more comfortable. But yeah, it was hard to like really feel good about him going into the next season just because he wasn't asked to do a ton. And I don't know, it's still fascinating to me that this team has the opportunity that it does. And you know, I mean, in some light you can look at this as a really important for year and for Arthur Smith and his tenure with the Falcons, and this it's Desmond Ridder and Taylor Heinicke at quarterback. It's not unlike the conversation we had about Washington, where it's like, really? I mean, everything's on the line here, and it's Sam Howell and Jacoby Brissett. You know, it's like, all right, y'all do you, but I would have tried to have done something more meaningful at quarterback this offseason other than, all right, come on down, Taylor Heinicke.
So I guess for Atlanta, and obviously we got to go over to the defensive side of the ball, but I think that this was the team that was most interesting that showed no interest in getting involved in the Lamar Jackson market.
Right.
And not to beat a dead horse or bemoan that point all over again. Obviously, the focus of this show is what the Falcons have. But the four-game sample size, obviously, that Ritter practiced all year at the facility, right? The coaches have a much larger sample size than we do as the public eye of what he's capable of. But the opportunity cost there may have been a deterrent where you're talking about a big-time investment in draft capital and finances and implications of that to bring him in. But this would have felt like the perfect team to get involved and at least start a negotiation when he was under the transition tag. So a little surprised that they were so forcibly and vocally against having any interest, which they were.
Yeah, I think you just look at the pendulum here. Okay, the team right now, wide open NFC South. The team's got a real good chance. You have Lamar Jackson, you're an NFC contender that I expect to win the South. Right? I think that's the difference there. And I'm interested in that, but here we are. All right, we're shifting gears to the defensive side of the football here in just a moment. But first, I need to tell you about the best-tasting protein bar on the planet. Of course, you know I just ate one, a Built Bar here, another animal cookie bar. We're still rolling through those. My birthday cake puffs arrived yesterday, so we were enjoying them as well. But look, folks, you got to try them. They're awesome. They're healthy. They're delicious. They're delicious because they're covered in 100% real chocolate, and they have great flavors like we just talked about, in addition to like churro and peanut butter puff and coconut almond. They're so good. It's like eating a candy bar, but they're good for you. But it's crazy, these macros, man. Like 17 grams of protein, only 5 grams of sugar, 140 calories per bar. They are awesome. So check them out. Head on over to built.com. You can use our promo code LOCKEDON15. It'll get you 15% off your next order. You can also head on over to your local Walmart or Sam's Club and pick up a box off the shelf. We talk about them because we love them, and I think you will too. And if you try them, I think you're going to just find yourself thanking us later for that decision.
Defensively, for the Atlanta Falcons, we have a lot of new faces.
Yeah, needed that too.
I think that's the first thing that popped to me was just how many projected starters we have that weren't with this squad last year.
They needed it, man. An infusion of talent to like every level of the field, every position got something, it felt like here.
And not only got something, like got better.
No
got
question.
Notably better.
Yes.
With bringing in, say what you will about the ups and downs and the variants of Jeff Okuda. Okay, that's fine. You still got Jesse Bates at free safety in your secondary. You're definitively better regardless of how Jeff Okuda ends up playing. Second level, Caden Ellis, really good ad. Low-key, really good ad.
Yeah, he popped big time late last year for New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
They just couldn't keep him. I'm sure they'd have loved to keep him, but they couldn't.
Salary cap's not real, though, Joe.
Right. Well, think about that. Like, this dude's a seventh-round pick. They have, like, higher picks that this guy was on the field over.
Right.
I mean, he earned it. He played at a level that forced him to play over.
And Atlanta's going to need it, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because if it's not Caden Ellis, you have a lot of inexperience and a high variance play at off-ball linebacker.
Yeah.
And then up front, you obviously have David Onyemaeta and you have Calais Campbell. You got better on all three phases. I think that's the thing that Falcons fans should be most excited about is defensively looking at what your squad has to offer versus what it did last year. The floor is much higher from a talent perspective defensively.
Should be able to get some sacks this year, right, Kyle?
You would think. Now, I still don't love the edge group. Ebikadi popped a good bit.
Yeah, that was the name for me. I'm like, oh, who's 47?
It's Ebikadi. Yeah, and there he is screaming off the edge, hitting inside spin moves, working back underneath.
That's the edge guy that I get excited about here.
Yeah.
And then the rest of it is not necessarily as proven, but there's names here. I mean, Lorenzo Carter has played a lot of football. I think like him not playing as many snaps is probably a good thing for him and the defense. You know, they have D'Angelo Malone, who they drafted as well as Ebikadi last year.
Round.
Yeah, Zach Harrison it was a pick this year. They signed Bud Dupree. I'm not sure you can count on much there, but, you know, he's a guy that plays with a lot of effort and has a lot of speed off the edge, you know, at least before the injuries kind of caught up with him. And your interior package now with Onyemaeta and Jarrett to go with Calais Campbell. Like, you got some stuff working here.
Yeah.
And even like some of their depth here in Eddie Goldman and Taquan Graham as kind of like a plugged, you know, nose A-gap defenders, man. I like those guys in that type of role. You know, Eddie Goldman, obviously we haven't seen him do really anything since 2021, but if he can come in and just be a 20% of the time guy, he can really provide some value in a division now that we feel like everybody's going to be leaning into running the football based on the quarterback situations.
Yeah, other than New Orleans with Carr coming in, they'll probably look to pass the ball. But yeah, I really like the defensive. It's been 4 or 5 years now of Grady Jarrett and nobody else that you really feel like gives him a chance. Grady Jarrett's got to be over the moon. Because he's been an impactful player that entire stretch, and now he's actually got dudes around him. And like definitive dudes around him with Calais Campbell when he reduces inside, and David Onyemata and a nose tackle and Eddie Goldman, hoping he can return to what his peak form was when he kind of flashed with Chicago. I like the front. I think it's probably the most appealing thing about Atlanta's defense for me. If I had to go to both sides of the ball, I would say that the trenches is where Atlanta's best aligned.
Which is huge, right? Because that's been a criticism that we've had towards Atlanta. It's like, oh, y'all are just getting beat up, you know, up front, both sides of the ball. I'm, you know, writing mock drafts. If you didn't give Atlanta a trench player, they were going
to
yell at you for sure. And, like, we're sitting here today telling you we feel pretty good about these trenches. And so that should make Falcons fans feel good as well. We talked a little bit about the defensive backfield, Kyle. You know, obviously AJ Terrell, a budding star at corner, and they traded for Jeff Okuda and signed Jesse Bates, and Richie Grant really kind of came on last year as a safety. But there's some like developing young DBs that I kind of like for this football team, and Darren Hall, and D. Alford, Clark Phillips, who they just drafted, Jalen Hawkins. Like, there's some developing depth here that I think is really, really appealing to go with, you know, some guys that you feel comfortable with as starters.
Well, and the more versatile those guys end up being, I think the more it helps Richie Grant, who felt like dude lined up here, there, and everywhere last year.
Yeah.
Well, and see, you're looking up and you see 27 and he's in the backfield, or he's in coverage, or he's in deep third, or he's flying sideline to sideline off the second level. Like, they moved him around quite a bit, and I think his versatility is only going to be fully maximized when you have competency in the other spots around him to allow the defense to. There were too many instances in which they were bringing Richie Grant from depth and pressure situations, and it was just pitch and catch because you didn't have the coverage on the back end to match it. So
Bates should help big time there.
Yes. So I agree with you that I think there's some appeal with the growth of what the young guys are able to do. I do think losing Isaiah Oliver hurts.
Yeah, I was, like, impressed with that guy.
Yes. Yeah, I know you texted me with the name, and I'm like, I'm going to hold that thought because I've had that name circled a couple times where I'm watching these games and I'm watching Isaiah Oliver break up passes, and I'm like, my guy's looking pretty good, huh?
He's going to be a starter for San Francisco. We'll get to San Francisco at some point here, but I think that's like low-key, sneaky good signing of the offseason.
Yeah, so that's a bummer to not bring him back, but with what else you brought in and paying Jesse Bates and Mike Hughes, trading for Jeff Okuda, which is a reasonable risk to take in the last year of his rookie contract, they'll be okay on the back end. But Oliver was a fun storyline from watching Atlanta play last year.
Super fun. Let me ask you one more question here on this defense. What did you see from Troy Anderson, he's going to start for them this year?
Raw.
Raw, but he flies around.
Super athletic profile, right?
He needs every bit of it with some of the misreads, man.
Yeah, but that's to be expected from where he came from. Montana State.
Yeah, played like every position.
Literally quarterback, running back, tight end.
Yeah.
He was like the FCS Taysom Hill is what he was.
Times two.
And then he ends up playing defense and wins defensive player of the year.
After being the offensive player of the year.
But won defensive player of the year twice, playing two different positions. He was an outside linebacker and then an inside linebacker, and won defensive player of the year both times. Just, I think where you saw his peak was on the punt team. I don't know if you think that's fair. But to watch him on the punt team, and you could roll your eyes if you want, that's fine. Where you're in a protection, where you're in the protection front, and then you got to get down the field and you got to cover kicks and you got to flash reactively in space. And it's not about making reads. It's not about keying your guards. It's not about figuring out if it's run or pass. It's just use your athleticism to block, release, get downfield, find the football, and tackle the football. That was when it was like, yeah, man, like, this is such a high-ceiling player for the athletic gifts on how easy that looks for him. You're just going to have some patience. And I am a little worried about, you know, Caden Ellis is somewhat of a hybrid-type player, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if these are your two peak off-ball linebackers, I think misdirection could test them a little bit. A lot of bit. Middle of the field targets in to tight ends and big bodied receivers in the middle of the field can be a challenge for this team. So I think that's where you go back to the versatility of Richie Grant and Jesse Bates, mm-hmm. and those guys are gonna have to help to cover that, right? But yeah. I think that's gonna help really define. We'll talk about the diminished value of linebackers and all that, but those two guys in Caden Ellis, who played well down the stretch, and Troy Anderson, who is so physically gifted but is so raw, what jump he makes in year two is going to determine some of the ceiling and the floor of the Falcons' defense. Because I think on the front end, on the back end, there's a lot of competency. The second level is going to be the defining. It's going to tip the scales one way or the other, in my mind.
Yeah, and of course, bringing it all together, right? New defensive coordinator, a lot of new pieces, but I like their chances, man.
In this division, I think they'll be pretty competitive.
Yeah. All right, well, we got a few disagreements to sort out here as we continue this conversation about the Atlanta Falcons.
Joe, do you want to stay on defense and just do my cues?
Yeah, so just for those of you who
Let me pull up the...
Yeah.
Here's the...
Maybe there's a Falcons fan that just tuned in today. We've been doing this for a bunch of teams, including some rivals, right? We've done the Carolina Panthers already. But we're Kyle and I independently go through. We watch multiple games. We study the roster. We study the players. And we put them in buckets, either roster cornerstone, quality starter, rookie starter, rookie, adequate starter, replacement level player, quality depth, non-roster caliber, incomplete evaluation, and practice squad developmental player. That's the different buckets. And so we have a consensus. If you're on the YouTube channel, I think you can see where we all agree, and where there's no label, that's where Kyle and I were different, and we're going to sort that out right now.
So we have five players. Four of them are on the offensive line.
Okay.
And then we have Mike Hughes. So let's start with Mike Hughes.
Okay.
I believe you had him as an adequate starter.
That's right, I do.
I had him as quality depth. And obviously Mike Hughes is a former first-round pick. Maybe that's a little bit of bias creeping in on me. I just thought, you know, even as his play has stabilized, he has not been a high-floor player in coverage. I think he's been much better fitting the run, kind of serving in that nickel role. I agree that the nickel is where he is at his peak. But in coverage, trying to match up and run with guys and lock on receivers, I just think that that's still too high variance or low return on investment to justify putting him as, like, I want him to be my starter there. I would ideally like Clark Phillips to win that job.
Okay, I'm with you. Quality depth.
That's it.
You didn't even. I was ready for you to say he's on his fourth team in 4 years. You didn't even get to that.
You're right. I didn't. I was expecting a fight. That's why.
No,
I thought you were going to go to bat on it.
I was on the fence there. So.
Okay, so we'll go ahead and classify him as quality depth, and I'll move to the offensive line. And where are you most passionate here?
Okay, where am I most passionate? Let me move
Hennessy, over. Drew Dalman, Jalen Mayfield, and Caleb McGarry.
Oh, man. Okay. Let's just start with Hennessy, who was a third-round pick, 2020. kind of spot duty in 2020. I thought he was a really good starter in 2021. And Falcons were in my previous – in my region of responsibility. So I gained an appreciation for him. And then last year, he only played in like two or three games. And he came back kind of late in the season. So I think he was on that trajectory. I think they probably told us they're a little bit worried when they signed Matthew Bergeron – or, excuse me, drafted Matthew Bergeron and actually traded up for him, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
But I've seen enough to feel like he's at least a sufficient starter. But
do you think he's ideally a center or a guard?
Center. He played left guard though last year. At least in the Arizona and Tampa Bay game, those are the two that I
right,
watched.
He got his butt kicked.
Think so?
I thought against Tampa, he got his butt kicked.
Oh.
So that's where I came in and I said, this is a player with some starting experience. He has interior flex. He doesn't have a great anchor. He's a little undersized, but if you're going to put him at center, like he can live in that world. But I don't know that the ceiling is where I would want it to be for him to be a starter. So I put him as quality depth.
I'll give this one to you on the premise of they drafted Matthew Bergeron knowing who Matt Hennessy was.
And knowing that he was potentially your
starting
fifth.
Left guard.
Yeah.
If you didn't do this, yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So Drew Dolman is next. If we're just going to go left from right, this is the projected starting center for this team, unless Hennessy wins the job. Fourth round rookie last year.
No, 21. So that was the second season. Yeah.
Excuse me. Would just like to get a little bit bigger sample size.
Okay, so I have him as an adequate starter. You have incomplete?
Yes. Now, he played over 1,000 snaps last year, right?
Right. I mean, if you go off of last year, I think you could say that he's an adequate starter. If you say you want to see more before you put him in that bucket, I mean, I understand both sides here. I thought he was very stable.
You came down to Hennessy. I'll come up with Dolman and say, okay, you know, we have 1,000 snaps of starting, and the expectation is he's an incumbent. I think the gap between him and Hennessy is not very large, though, in my mind.
I think that's probably fair. But I guess I see them similarly.
Which is what makes it interesting that, you know, from Hennessy's perspective, he was the starting center, and then they came back the following year and drafted Dolman anyway, and Dolman beat him out.
Yeah. I wondered if the thought was for one of them probably Hennessy to be a left guard.
Which probably takes you to the next player on the list who had played left guard at one stretch, that being Jalen Mayfield.
All right, what do I have him? I have him as...
I think you have an incomplete grade here.
Yeah, so, okay, he was absolutely atrocious as a rookie starter and had no business starting, none. And they didn't play at all last year. So that's why I put him in as an incomplete evaluation.
And I had a really hard time forgetting 2021.
It's the brother, his pass pro was atrocious.
But 9 penalties and double-digit sacks conceded, yeah.
Yeah, 57 pressures. He's 22. All right, this is he'll be his age 23 season.
Well, hold on. He's going to be 23 in 5 days.
That's what I just said. He'll be his age 23 season.
Yeah,
because he is 22, and he's going to be his age 23 season.
Okay, I'm not going to fight you too hard on the backup guard.
I put him as incomplete, and you put him as...
I had replacement level player. I just thought the floor was so low when he played.
It's bad. He didn't play last year, though.
And now they have continued to draft interior offensive linemen early in each of the draft classes since he has arrived. Like, he was in the same class as Hennessy, and then they still drafted Dolman in the fourth round, and then they traded up and drafted Bergeron.
It's not a good trajectory.
Right. It's not trending well for Jalen Mayfield.
It's not trending well. I don't know, one season that was kind of a tough scene for him, like, first year with the new system. He was kind of raw coming out. He was like a one-year starter at Michigan.
Yeah, don't quit on guys too quick. I'm with you. We'll put incomplete.
It's not looking good, though.
Caleb McGarry.
All right, this one, I'm not going to fight hard here. You have him as a quality starter.
This is why I don't quit on guys.
I have him as an adequate starter. And I think, like, you're clearly pointing to last year and saying he proved himself as a quality starter. And I would agree with you. I just, how much of the rest of the sample size are we wanting to be mindful of?
Right. Well, I think year two in this system, this is the perfect scheme for Caleb McGarry.
Right.
I think he's an elite run blocker in this wide zone system.
Correct. And probably an average pass blocker.
Yes. I think that if you were to put categories on each element there, and that's why I don't have him as a cornerstone, if he grows in pass pro and all of a sudden he starts being a stud in pass pro, he can be a cornerstone player. But right now, he has an elite component of his game and an adequate level of his game. You combine those together, this is a plus starter in my mind.
He was a plus starter last year.
Yes.
Okay, I'll do it.
And even from a pass pro perspective, he cut his pressures in more than half last year. And Atlanta only threw the ball 117 less times. He went from 41 pressures to 19 pressures last year.
I'll meet you. I'll come up on this one.
Done.
Because I'm not debating anything that you're saying. It's just whether or not last year's sample size, and I think continuing with the system and the fit, it works.
Right. I see no reason to think why the progress shown last year will not be sustained unless he has to play through injuries. So there you have the Falcons. We have roster cornerstone players in Jake Matthews and Chris Lindstrom. We have quality starters with A.J. Terrell, Kyle Pitts, Caleb McGarry, Grady Jarrett, Jesse Bates, and Calais Campbell. Joe, this is a pretty healthy amount of quality starters.
Yeah.
I think the Achilles heel, potential Achilles heels for this Falcons team is linebackers defensively and quarterback play offensively, or wide receiver depth. Heaven help us if Drake London has to miss any time.
Yeah, we can't have it. We can't have it. But I think it's also exciting to think about the guys that could be quality starters in a Drake London as we get a bigger sample size in a Bijan Robinson as two of your primary players, your
Correct.
Weapons on offense, right? Like, there's upward mobility for Caden Ellis. There's upward mobility for Troy Anderson.
I think Richie Grant could potentially have upward mobility as well.
No question. So that's good. And we talked about some of their developing. Like, they have developing depth in the defensive backfield, at edge, on the offensive line. I like that.
Hey, I think the other potential Achilles heel for this team would be the third tackle.
Oh, gosh, yeah, we don't have one.
If Matthews are – okay, so here's – is Bergeron your third tackle?
Yes. Yes, a million percent he's your third tackle. So if he wins the left guard job, then Hennessy goes to left guard, and then you put Bergeron at left guard.
And then
you
put Bergeron at whichever spot you need to. And like, that you could build a bridge that way, but offensive line depth is not great here.
They have seven rosterable offensive linemen. No, that's it. That's it.
And one of the seven is Jalen Mayfield, who was cataclysmic when he played.
Yeah, so we cut Jermaine Ifedi.
We have six and a half. They can't incur injuries. They cannot afford the injuries. Joe, final question, and I think this is pretty straightforward. Are the Falcons a better roster right now than they were 12 months ago?
A billion percent.
A billion
Easy
percent.
Yes. Easy
I agree.
Yes.
Easy yes. So there you have it. That is the Atlanta Falcons roster assessment. I'm Kyle Krabs. He is Joe Marino. We are Locked On NFL Scouting. Appreciate you guys checking out the show. Hit subscribe. Follow along. We are doing quarterback situations for the class of 2022 tomorrow. So we're looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Atlanta Falcons, and the
Commanders.
Washington Commanders. Thank you. So you're not going to want to miss that. That's a very fun opportunity to measure each one of those situations versus rookie and second and third year quarterback situations across the league over the last several seasons. It's a very fun exercise we've been doing for a few years now. So we are adding a new bunch to that big board of situations tomorrow. Shout out to the everydayers who keep it locked in on a daily basis with us here on Locked On NFL Scouting. Kyle Krabs, Joe Marino. We are out. Peace.